Hey everybody, we're Esmo again, Lisa Pickering from the Marsden, discussing three, no less than three abstracts on Bell's
That might
Lutheran
be a record for this podcast.
I think it is, Lise. Lise, welcome.
Congratulations.
Thank you. On your talk and everything. Lisa, I guess the first place to start is the randomized phase three. So Laurence presented Belzutifan versus everolimus in heavily pre-treated disease. We know from the phase two data that's gone before it, the response rates are about 20%. And this is a big pivotal randomized phase three to get FDA and EMA approval. What did it show?
So the headline data, this was a trial with dual primary endpoints of PFS and of OS. And the trial is positive for PFS. So those are the headline data. The hazard ratio, which is stable across the first and second interim analyses, is stable at 0.74. That's the final analysis of the PFS endpoint. So that's headline number one. I think headline number two is that the second primary endpoint was OS, and this is an interim analysis of OS and not the final analysis. At this time point, it is not positive for OS. So numerically, OS was longer with belzutifan than with everolimus. It was 21 months versus 18 months. But that does not meet significance. So there is another final OS analysis to come at some point next year, not sure when, or even actually for certain that it is next year. And then there were other secondary endpoints, the key endpoint of objective response rate, which, as you say, it is around 20%, just over, actually about 23%. I guess the really big news is that this is the first confirmation that belzutifan in a randomized phase three setting is active against an active comparator of everolimus, and therefore is confirmation of a treatment strategy, an anti-HIF2-alpha treatment strategy in ARCC in a pretreated population.
Let's jump back to PFS, as you said, primary endpoint, pretty consistent across IA1 and IA2. These are really interestingly shaped curves.
Yeah.
So it's a little different than a normal PFS where they kind of drift apart and hopefully stay apart and you get a significant p-value. These curves overlap pretty much right to the median. And indeed, the medians were identical at 5.6 months.
Yeah.
But then they split. What do you make of that in terms of just your impression of the data or application of patients or biology of disease or any of the above?
I think it's really interesting in a number of ways. So first off, as you say, these curves overlap all the way out to 6 months for certain. And then it does look like they separate. And actually, unlike some of the early signals where time to response looked quite long with belzutifan out at 7 and 8 months, in Laurence's study that she's presented, it was actually much shorter, around 3.5 months, but the duration of response in the responders is really long. So there does seem to be something biologically about those people who respond are deriving this quite long, durable benefit, which I think is really interesting. Another thing that jumped out at me that I have found very interesting is, you know, we think of belzutifan, it's a tumor-directed drug. It works at the cancer level itself, which for us in the kidney cancer field, you know, is a little different. It's not the microenvironment, it is the tumor. And so we thought that maybe it was going to clearly be most active in maybe people who are VEGF naive, in those that have really VEGF driven tumors. But that PFS benefit, you can see it in across the cohorts in those who were actually pretty heavily pretreated, and also in the intermediate and poor risk by IMDC. Now, I know that's, you know, predictive, not prognostic, but still striking to me that maybe what I'd have my bias might have been you'd have seen a stronger signal and a weaker signal in the intermediate poor risk, but actually that's not the case. So there is something happening out later on that I find really interesting.
And this was largely, sorry, Tom, this was largely a third and fourth line study, about 90% of patients, and about half the patients got one prior TKI and half got 2 to 3. So it's a fairly refractory patient, you know, which again plays into your comments that it wasn't just the earlier lines or VEGF naive patients, it seemed to be across prior treatments.
Like everyone's had a TKI and IO. So everyone's had an immune checkpoint inhibitor. And more than 80%, nearly 90%, have had two or three prior lines of therapy, half of whom have had two or three prior TKIs. So it's a, you know, it's quite a tough group. It's a heavily pre-treated group, and yet there is clear activity of belzutifan, although as you point out, the separation with everolimus doesn't happen out till beyond 6 months.
So at least a 20% or 25% respond, which is great, but the 75% not responding, and those responders do really well, which suggests that there is a subgroup of patients who do well, and then there's some patients who is not benefiting very much. Do we have any idea about biomarkers?
So to pick up your first point, Tom, so the PD rate is around 1/3. So the response rate's just over 20%, and then there's a disease control rate. So the proportion with PD as their primary best response was around 1/3 of patients. So those are not benefiting. This study doesn't address biomarkers, so we don't have anything from Laurence's presentation about biomarkers. I mean, obviously, we know that EPO levels are a direct consequence of HIF-2 alpha inhibition and can be measured as such. But to my mind, I haven't seen the data that tells me that they're predictive. And well, they're not predictive. They're not predictive. So I'm not sure that at this point we do have predictive biomarkers, actually, partly because of the point I just made with Brian, that we don't, from disease biology, at the moment, actually, PFS benefit is certainly seen, say, across cohorts. So I don't know that, although in theory, this drug is definitely acting at tumor level, that actually at the moment that that's told us anything about biomarkers that are going to help us select yet.
Lisa, no, in our introduction, ESMO introduction podcast that we make before ESMO each year, talking about the highlights of the meeting. Brian, by the way, if you haven't heard that, there's no point in looking now because the meeting's been and gone. But in that, Brian was very critical of the control arm. Everything was.
What control arm might you have used?
Well, I was involved in the study, so I can't be too critical. But yeah, no, I think there's you know, this study was designed many years ago, but there's been certainly a lot of discussion around everolimus, which I think has fallen out of favor with other TKIs and, you know, tivozanib and other things coming in. So maybe I think, Tom, the question was, Tom was asking while simultaneously trying to make fun of me was, you know, does this control arm color your view of the results, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. I think when this trial was designed, everolimus, you know, this is patients who all of whom had IO and all of whom have had at least one TKI. So I think at the time this trial was designed, looking forward and selecting a different control arm, tricky. Actually, if we think at look at how everolimus performed, because actually it didn't perform worse than you'd expect for everolimus. It's a There are slightly fewer favorable risk patients in this study than there were, say, in Meteor or Record One. So, and in terms of what everolimus did, the PFS is in the ballpark you'd expect. In fact, numerically a little bit longer, despite the fact that the patient cohort is, you know, at least as challenging. So, everolimus did not underperform in this study. Did it overperform in this study? I don't really think so either. So I think we have to bear in mind the belzutifan results in that an mTOR inhibitor is maybe not the highest bar to set in terms of overall survival. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, I guess
it is an active drug. It's an active drug. And, you know, the first, I mean, sure, you both remember, we all remember that an mTOR inhibitor in the frontline setting was the first drug that did show an OS advantage in the WHO-DES study of temsirolimus. I know that was against
old school.
Yeah, so really old school. So it's not an inactive strategy, but it's not the highest bar in reality. And I think we probably have to accept that. And in truth, I would rather have seen the OS being positive in this study. Of course I would. But I still think the PFS is an important result. It's confirmation of the strategy being active in a heavily treated group of patients.
So a comment, comment and a question. So I guess a comment about everolimus as a control arm. I think it really speaks that we haven't done much in refractory kidney cancer lately, right? There hasn't been a lot of great data. And what's the right, this is a question I ask my fellows in clinic. It's sort of a trick question. You're like, what's the best third, fourth, and fifth line treatment in kidney cancer? I have no idea, right? We don't really have a standard there, right? The tivozanib data wasn't out when this trial was designed. Sure. And so, it's a very, everolimus at the time was a very unexciting standard of care, but a standard of care nonetheless. And I think if you just look at the Belzu data, you know, in and of itself, that arm in and of itself, as you said, Lisa, it clearly shows activity. I have a question about OS for you, Tom, before you go. So how important is it to show OS? If you look at the OS for interim analysis one and two, the hazard ratio is nearly identical, 0.87 to 0.8. So, it's not like it's getting better and it might get better to a significance level. We don't know. And again, Belzu can be a late acting drug. So these curves could easily, you know, split more and become significant at a subsequent analysis. But if that never happens, will you still use the drug? Does that color your perception of the drug in general?
So
you go, Liz.
Okay, so I would still use the drug because it's active, and I think PFS and PFS is an important endpoint. It won't be as pleasing as if the OS is eventually. It is positive. And for the reasons you say, you know, that there is another analysis to come, the PFS curves separate really late, and there is a good, pretty impressive duration of response out at 19 and a half months in Laurence's data that we've seen. So I think there is some hope that, you know, that maybe something will continue to happen, but it might not. If it doesn't, there are a group of patients who benefit from this, and that group of patients have shown better benefits than they get from our current, as you say, unsatisfactory probably standard of care with everolimus. So yes, I would, but I would be even happier if the OS were positive.
Lisa, let's talk about adverse events and quality of life.
Yeah,
because I think that's really important in setting. What did it show?
So it showed that I mean, the drug overall is pretty well tolerated. And that's, I think, an important finding with of belzutifan that I think is echoed in this compared with some of the earlier data that we've seen presented already. The anemia rates are high. And actually, grade 3 hypoxia is also quite high. But overall, this is a well-tolerated drug by the vast majority of patients, which also is in its favour.
And the quality of life?
Quality of life. So the quality of life, I mean, so we've seen quality of life presented compared with everolimus. And there is actually really early separation. So unlike the PFS separation, which takes a long time to emerge, actually the quality of life separation seems to happen quite early. So that, I guess, is also helpful, and also helpful for belzutifan, and in considering, you know, to go back to Brian's question, would I consider using it, that I think helps my confidence maybe in saying yeah, I would, because actually those patient reported outcomes do separate pretty early.
And I think in this refractory setting where we're not curing patients, you know, that tolerance, that quality of life to me takes on, you know, more and more importance, you know, than it might in a frontline setting. You might accept more toxicity and reduce quality of life to produce cure. That's not the case in this setting. So I think, you know, Belzu has a reputation as a well-tolerated drug, and I think these data bear it out.
Brian, question for you. So the debate around tumor heterogeneity, VEGF-driven tumors, and acquired mutations, and there's been work on that, and we've done podcasts on it. Is this the right place to explore this drug? You know, VEGF-driven tumors, we assume, are going to be more responsive. We've got that great VHL data showing incredible responses that Eric Yonner showed us in the primary tumor. Is this the wrong place to investigate the drug? Is that many of these patients are now VEGF independent, and this is and that's why the response rate in this environment is relatively modest, because we're going to talk about a study in a second, a frontline trial, where the response rate's higher. I know the control arm might not be right, but actually on the other side, was this the wrong environment to test the drug in the first place?
I wouldn't say wrong, but I would say probably not optimal. And as we talk about the next set of data we're going to talk about, and we eventually get frontline combo data, I would think we're going to see that less refractory patients are probably more purely, you know, HIF/VEGF driven, right? We don't fully have that data set yet. And as you know, drug development often starts in this very refractory setting for a variety of reasons. So there's activity here, but I think we're going to see even greater activity up front. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing in that PFS curve. Just to go back to that story and the biomarker question is, you know, a third of patients progress right away. That's not great, right? And that tells you that those patients quite obviously have tumors driven by, you know, who knows what pathway, but clearly not HIF/VEGF. But then there's this tail of the curve, right? These curves separate. So there's clearly a group of patients that we don't yet have the tools or biomarker to identify that can respond and do so quite well. So even in refractory kidney cancer, there is a set of HIF-driven tumors, right? Patients with HIF-driven tumors.
Lisa, let's shift gears. Let's talk about the combination, because Tony's presenting a combination in the frontline setting, which may be a better place for this drug. And the response rates look really good. Do you want to talk a little bit about that trial? I know there was a cohort that was already published in The Lancet, but this was an update. Well, Lancet Oncology, this was an update. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what that showed?
Yeah, so this is an open label study, phase two study of belzutifan at its standard dose, 120 milligrams daily, in combination with cabozantinib, starting at 60 milligrams daily. So standard introductory dosing of both drugs. And in the frontline setting, so we have 50 patients frontline, treatment naive, another 52 who are pre-treated. In the frontline setting, the response rate is 70%, with a disease control rate of 98%. Wow. And so that's only one patient who progressed in the frontline setting, which is pretty impressive in terms of overall activity. The pre-treated cohort, I mean, as you'd expect, the numbers are not quite that favorable for the reasons Brian's just outlined. They know more of them have seen VEGF therapy already. In the pre-treated cohort, the response rate was just over 30%, 31%, but still a really good disease control rate, actually, at 92%. So not that many people with primary progression in this combination strategy of belzutifan with cabozantinib.
I mean, that response rate of, I mean, the cohort two is kind of what we saw in the Lancet Oncology publication.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
I don't know, those numbers are much different. But in the,
I don't think they've changed much. And actually, I suppose that is a point, in that even with longer follow up and the fact that, you know, we think maybe this drug in some people is doing something later, actually, those numbers are pretty stable since the previously published initial analysis with 31% response rate.
And the PFS in the treatment naive, and understand it's single arm and all the, you know, the problems with time to event endpoints in single arm studies, the median PFS was 30 months.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, are these data, is this just a small cohort in single arm and it's misleading? Or is this back to our previous point that giving this drug early, and this is in combo, but using this approach early really makes a lot of sense and is really going to lead to these sort of spectacular outcomes?
Well, first of all, sure, it makes a lot of sense. So it definitely makes biological sense. I guess what I definitely don't know, but would love to know and will look forward to seeing in the future, is how close this is to what happens in a randomized setting. Because if this is, you know, if this is true or close to true, then that's, you know, that's fantastic. I mean, I don't know whether it will be as good as that in a randomized setting, and it may well not be, but gosh, if it was even close to that, that would be transformatively brilliant.
But wait a second, Len Penn is 73% already. So we've already have 70% in randomized trials. And Pembro AXI 65%. So I know, but do you think it's still transformative?
No. I was talking about PFS, Tom. So the response rate is in the ballpark of some of the other frontline combinations that we've seen. I think we probably have to take the PFS at 30 months accepting that this is an open label phase two with small numbers of patients. Also, these are people who've probably many of whom didn't have frontline IO for a reason. So I don't know quite who this group exactly are and how maybe how representative they truly are. But so I agree that the ORR is in the ballpark of what we've seen, but it's nevertheless impressive.
But I'd say two things, Tom. I mean, if this doublet by itself can produce this response rate in PFS or anything close, right, you know, then two things. One, for patients who can't get IO, right, who have contraindications, then it gives you a regimen that has, you know, tumor shrinkage effects, i.e. response rate in PFS, that's in the ballpark of the immune-based doublets. So that would be welcome, although it's not that many patients. It's a subset. And then quite obviously, and this will be tested in the triplet study, if you then add in a PD-1 inhibitor, you know, is it going to make these results even better, right? Because then you're attacking a different pathway, right? Those inflammatory tumors that this doublet isn't touching, you know, you're going to see response rates that could be out of this world.
I'm going to ask you both a couple of questions. I want no sitting on the fence. So the frontline randomized phase three trial of Len-Pen-Belzutifan versus Len-Pen. There's another arm, but let's not go into that. Let's just go the triplet with Belzutifan. Is that trial going to be positive for PFS and OS? Lise, you go first.
So Len-Pen-Belzutifan versus Len-Pen.
Yep. Is it going to be positive for PFS or OS? Yes or no?
Okay. I'm ever the optimist, Tom, and I want this study to be absolutely merit the 1,600 patients going into it. So I'm going with yes.
Do you gamble on horses are you successful?
I probably gamble and then don't bother checking because I don't want to know whether I'm right or not. I want to be right, Tom. I want
Lisa,
to be right.
What about, I've got a second question for you, if I may. I'll come back both for Brian. There's also an adjuvant study of Pembro plus or minus Belzutifan. Is that trial going to be positive PFS?
I don't know. You said I wasn't allowed to sit on the fence, and I'm slightly on the fence.
Not allowed to.
So, serious point. This drug's working at tumor level, and that's different than we've experienced before. My heart is going to go with yes. It's going to be positive.
And Brian, same question. Two questions for you.
I'm involved with the frontline triplet, but not the adjuvant, just to admit my potential bias beforehand. But I'll say yes.
But you don't know the results of the trial.
I don't know any results either. Of course.
Okay.
But I'll say yes to the first and no to the second. So I think, especially with the data we just talked about, it's pretty clear that a HIF inhibitor and TKI are active in the frontline setting, and they appear more active, as much as you can say from a single arm study, than TKI monotherapy. And biologically, it stands to reason, and you can tolerate Belzu for a long time, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of reasons why that triplet arm certainly could produce response and PFS advantages. You know, OS is always a bit of a crapshoot, obviously, with subsequent therapy, but I think it'll be a clean sweep on those endpoints. I think in the adjuvant. What's that?
Sorry, I apologize. You keep going on the adjuvant thing.
On the adjuvant, I'm used to being interrupted by you. It's okay. And the adjuvant setting, I think
I don't usually apologize.
The biology is totally different. So again, the difference is, if you look at, you know, data about who relapses in the adjuvant setting, and Ari Hakimi has a great paper about this in Clinical Cancer Research, it's the inflammatory folks, right? It's not these indolent HIF VEGF driven tumors. That's why largely the VEGF studies were negative. It's more of an inflammatory phenotype. So I think the building on Pembro in the adjuvant setting is going to be adding immunomodulatory drugs, not adding a HIF inhibitor or VEGF pathway inhibitors, in my opinion. But we'll see, right? We have a huge trial that I think completed accrual. So we'll see or not. But I have a sense that that trial won't meet its endpoints. But again, I think it's very different than the frontline metastatic. It's not just along a continuum.
I've been banging on for ages, in fact, so long that I'm actually boring myself with this issue.
Welcome to the club.
And that issue is that in good risk disease, I feel that Belzutifan is a better drug than in poor risk disease, because although it's an oversimplification, good risk seems to be more VEGF driven and poor risk seems to have a higher immune inflammatory component to it. However, in the subset analysis of the randomized trial versus everolimus, the hazard ratios were the same, 0.747567 for the three populations. So it doesn't look like IMDC risk is identifying patients that benefit from VEGF targeted from Belzutifan therapy. So I've got it completely wrong. Have I got that wrong?
No, I mean, we all, I mean, those PFS curves scream that there's a biomarker out there, but it's not IMDC. It's not any of our clinical risk factors, because clinical risk identifies heterogeneous biology, right?
But so you accept that there are more good risk patients who have VEGF component to it. You accept that?
Yes.
And you accept, and you accept in all the trials we've done, the VEGF has performed best in the good risk population, and in COSMIC 313, cabozantinib didn't seem to do anything in poor risk. So the VEGF does seem to be mainly good risk. I know it's not a perfect classification, but it does seem to be doing something. I've got to stand up for Danny at some point in this whole podcast.
No, and it's, and Danny himself would say it's, and Lisa said this, it's prognostic, not predictive, right? There are associations, but when we're talking about individual patients, right, as you well know, for biomarkers, it's about an individual patient biomarker.
So in the frontline trial, will belzutifan work best in the good risk patients or the poorest patients, Brian? That's the question I'm asking. I'm sorry it took me so long to get there. I apologize.
Well, I don't know.
So disappointing.
Yes, I know you want me to say be good risk, but it's not belzutifan by itself, right? It's a triplet combo.
Okay, Lisa, have you got a strong opinion on this? Would you also think it's a stupid question?
My fairly strong opinion is that it's impossible to untangle that now, partly because of what you just said, Tom, which is that the PFS hazard ratio is stable across the prognostic groups. And also, I suspect it'll be impossible to untangle, certainly from a biomarker perspective, by the time we have a triplet strategy hitting three different targets. So my fairly strong opinion is that it's definitely not possible to answer your question today. And I'm a little dubious whether it'll be possible to answer your question even down the line.
I knew it was a bad question.
We need to wrap up, but do you want to talk about, there was a, Neeraj presented a dose finding study of 200 versus 120 milligrams, about 75 patient needs that each that did not show much difference, sort of each in the 20-ish% response rate. Any, at least any comment on that? Does it make us smarter? Does it, is the dosing question still open?
So first of all, I think the dosing question is not open. I get why the study was done. The study was done because belzutifan, for anyone that doesn't recall, did not meet its MTD in the phase one studies. And so this study was done to look at a larger group of patients to make sure we could be confident in the selected dose, which is 120 milligrams daily. In Neeraj's study, it was compared against 200 milligrams and there was no difference. And the bottom line is there was no difference in efficacy. There was no benefit in terms of any efficacy readout for the higher dose. So what it does is it can give us confidence in the dose that we've been discussing today, in the doses that were used in Laurence's and in Tony's studies and in the studies going forward. So I think it puts to bed that question. And actually, I think in of itself, that's a helpful thing to have done.
Do you make anything in the 200 milligram and the higher dose? There was 5% CRs versus none in the 120. Is that just noise around small numbers, or do you think there's anything real there?
I think it's small numbers. I think it's probably small numbers, but you know, I can't hang my hat on that and say that I know it to be the case.
Lisa, this has been magic.
Genuine, it's been a pleasure.
A lot of questions still out there. Important meeting for belzutifan, but a lot of questions to ask and answer, as we said. But thanks for joining us, Lisa. We appreciate it.
Lisa, thanks very much. Fabulous.
Great pleasure. Thank you.